Hello, this is Nicole Smith with another episode of Pro Dignity No Doubt. This is, we're here again with a really interesting guest, Deanna Gachion. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, this is like,
Deanna.
Yeah. I mean, I have a last name, Smith, so, you know, I married a man, common of name, not of character. So, you know, I'm like, well, just like every other guest we have on, really, really interesting story that I feel just really needs to be told. So let's just, you know, dive right in. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi. Well, thank you for having me on. Mm-hmm. My name is Deanna in Arizona. I've got three girls. I've got two grown daughters, 26 and 21. And then I have my youngest, Jalen. She's 16.
Oh, wow. Great.
And, And she was born with a rare genetic disorder called Cornelia de Lange syndrome.
Okay.
So
I've never heard of it. So you're right.
I know.
Yeah.
Rare. It's very rare. I've never met another person with it. But the thing is that the symptoms and a lot of the behaviors and challenges, they cross over, you know, into all these other diagnoses that kids have. And
is it genetic in origin?
So that's what they call it. They call it a genetic disorder. I have my doubts. I don't know. I don't know why it happened. I had a traumatic pregnancy. I had some things happen during pregnancy that really threw me. And I have my own ideas about what could have triggered this.
Gotcha.
But
I could
be wrong. But I think it's just my mind trying to answer the questions like how and why, right?
Yeah.
So I was totally not expecting that. I've been into health and nutrition my whole life.
Yeah.
I raised my first two girls, you know, extremely healthy, and they never had sugar. And I was a big proponent of breastfeeding, and we grow our own food and all that. And so when I became pregnant at 40, I was told that I was high risk.
Yes.
And I was not in the least worried because I was, you know, I was strong. I ate well and took care of myself. And I thought it won't be a problem for me, you know. But it was. I got so into pregnancy, I developed gestational diabetes.
Oh, wow.
Which really surprised me. But then again, I had all this major stress going on during the pregnancy. So it got to the point during pregnancy where I just was praying, God, please protect this baby, because I was taking care of my in-laws. My father-in-law had a stroke, and my mother-in-law put her over the cliff with her Alzheimer's. I had to move my father-in-law in here. My husband was very ill, and I had two other children. And
it was a rough time. Very stressful.
It was, and I wasn't properly caring for myself as I should have during pregnancy. And but I had no indication that, you know, that there was going to be anything wrong at birth. I did find out as we got closer that she was breech, and that was going to require a C-section. Wasn't thrilled about that. Tried to figure out how we could avoid that
at all costs. Yeah.
There's something that the doctor evidently can do. I have a hard time believing that they actually do this, but I read about it and I asked my doctor if he could do it. It's where they manually take your stomach, feel the baby through your stomach, and try to turn it around.
Yes, I've heard of that before.
All right, so I told the doctor I want that, and so we're down to the wire, right? I'm in the hospital, and we're gonna do this thing, and he's like, so I'm like, oh, I'm asking the nurses, have you ever seen this? And is it painful? It can be uncomfortable. That's all anybody would tell me. It could be uncomfortable.
Oh,
and I'm like, well, I can deal with uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
So the doctor comes in to do it. And are you kidding me? Oh my gosh. I mean, he dug his hands in. He had to find the baby. If I had really thought about it, I mean, I had to grab the baby through my belly and try to move it. You know, it was excruciating. And I didn't even like the idea that he was grabbing the baby like that. Forget it. Just stop. I'll take the C-section. So that's what we did.
Bailing out.
Wait a minute. What was I thinking? Right. Wish I had like seen something on it, you know, and I would have said no, but he was going to try anyway. To me, that's a dangerous practice. But so, we go in, the doctor lifts up the baby, you know, from behind the curtain, yeah. you know, as, you know, pulling her out. And I see her and she does not look developed. I mean, this is my third baby. My other babies were very tiny as well, but this child, something's not right. I can tell. And she was only, she was 3 weeks early, but they don't worry about that.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's not something to worry about. But I knew instantly something wasn't right just by the way she looked. And so I got her home and we had issues from the beginning. You know, they didn't say anything in the hospital. They sent us home, but I couldn't get her to nurse. And, you know,
that's the only way they're going to
survive, right?
Yeah, and yeah.
So I had an expert, you know, one of their people out, and we tried and tried and tried and tried, and it just wasn't going to work. So I resorted to pumping, and even with that, she couldn't swallow. So then serious things began to manifest, right?
Yep.
This child is not thriving. Now she's like 90s old. She's just not getting enough food. So that's kind of how the whole thing started. They started sending us to specialists, right? You need to go see this specialist, that specialist. And so I was just like in shock. I'm like, you know, I wasn't prepared for yeah. any of this. I didn't get any warning or anything. I'm like, okay, I'm just trusting she's going to be okay. And I'm going to all the doctors and they're doing their tests and they're not finding anything. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, I know things aren't normal, but it'll be okay. You know, mm-hmm. we'll get this. And I'm a woman of faith. And so I was just trusting. And, you know, time's going on and she's not meeting her milestones. Mm-hmm. And more tests and more specialists, and nobody ever said what they were looking for. Or they're just sending me around.
So how did she end up eating? Did she get an NG tube? Or
no, she didn't. It was a painful process, very slow. So I had to have a scale. I'd have to take her diaper off, weigh her, then I'd have to get as much as that, because it would kind of trickle, and then every few seconds she'd give a little swallow.
Yeah.
So,
what, you know, no aspirating or anything?
No.
Okay, that's good. Just know okay. the muscle tone wasn't there, the suck swallow.
That's right. And I did.
That was mm-hmm. our story, but her, my daughter wasn't able to suck swallow, breathe coordination wasn't there, and it all went into her lungs. So she ended up having to have a gastric tube. So I'm very familiar with this whole weighing thing.
Whoa.
And
yeah.
that whole process. Yeah.
It's
not fun.
I mean, you got to feed this baby every 2.5 hours. So, you know, you're feeding, and by the time you finish, it's time to get started
all over and again. So, and you're doing the pumping process too.
So I was not at all worried about breastfeeding because, like I said, I took good care of myself, although they told me most women at your age are not going to be able to breastfeed. I wasn't worried about it, but the pumping didn't help because, you know, that's not natural, you know, but you know, we were doing it and I was weighing her and then I'd put the diaper back on, feed her, take the diaper back off, see how many ounces
she got,
you know, and then do the other side and changing and wow, you know, and then I had complications from the C-section. I was the rare exception that had a problem with my spinal cord. And so it was challenging to say the least, but we were doing it. And then one day when she was about 3 months old, I woke up with 106 degree fever.
Oh no.
And just very, very ill. And I had developed an infection from the breastfeeding.
Mastitis.
And dried up, and that was it. You know, we're done. We're done. I couldn't bring it back.
Killed you. I'm sure that devastated. I had something similar in the sense that I did it until the point where it's like and I'm sure this was part of your thing as well, getting it back, where your body's going through so much stress. Early on, I was able to produce a lot because it was like a fight or flight. But I get about 9 months into the process and my body was so fatigued that it was just started to shut down and I wasn't producing milk anymore. It was just crazy. And I know how I just kept like, my husband's like, you're going to have to throw in the towel, Nick. I'm like, but I can't. So I know that feeling is just so, you feel so defeated. Like you've worked so hard for this and then your body's betrayed you.
Well, and I just,
that's what you feel like.
Yeah, I knew the importance of breast milk. And so I immediately thought, well, okay, there's got to be a healthy alternative. And when I went to look, there was not a healthy alternative. There wasn't mm-hmm. a thing out there that I would put in my baby's body. So mm-hmm. I had to figure out how to make my own yeah. and go to all places for all these sources. And I made, that's what we did. And so yeah, it wasn't until, I mean, they just kept us, you know, running around for like 2.5 years. Finally, at the 2.5 year mark, they had done all the genetics testing. They still couldn't find it. They weren't coming up with a thing. So I remember that last, of course, I can never forget it, that last visit to that neurologist. He had done all the genetics testing, and he just came in and he's looking at over her reports, and he goes, well, he goes, nothing's showing up. We're just going to diagnose her with global developmental delay.
Oh, yeah. A cop
and
out.
I'm like, I didn't know what that was, but yeah. I knew it meant nothing because I could obviously see they didn't have anything. They just put a label on you. So I'm like, what does that mean? And he told me what he told me next caused like an explosion in my brain. So this is what he said. I couldn't even say it for the longest time. He said, he was an older doctor too. So kind of old school. I doubt the younger doctors would do this. He said, she's mentally retarded and she'll never be able to learn. And you know, that had never crossed my mind. Not yeah. in a million years had that crossed my mind. I just thought, we were having these issues, you know, it'll come together. She'll be okay.
Yeah.
You know, this happens to some kids. And, you know, that just hit me. Like I said, I felt like my brain exploded.
Yeah.
And I said, well, because I had been already starting therapies, you know, all kinds of therapies. We were doing all kinds of stuff. I knew it was her brain needed help. And so I was doing things. I said, but, you know, best I could, I must have just, I don't know, been white. And I said, but, you know, there are therapies and this. And he goes, he looked like he felt sorry for me. He goes, it's not going to help. He said, just take her home and love her.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's it.
Anybody that's going through this, like, I just want us to sink into this moment because doctors, I don't think they realize how much of an impact their words make. Because when you're going through this process, especially with the diagnosis and you're just kind of trying to come to terms, you're basically in a moment of mourning, a season of mourning. You're mourning your expectations not being met. And here you are just struggling through this. And then you have a doctor that just lays these words out on your lap and expects it to be received, into a normal brain. Your brain is not normal in that moment. You're so just not okay. And so nothing that's received really, especially plainly, bluntly, and not well pretty packaged, like just handed off. And now you have to take that and hold it for the rest of your life. Like that's what you have to hold the rest of your life on top of all this stuff is this idea that your expectations of what was supposed to be normal and right and beautiful is never going to be met. At least according to this thing they've handed you. I mean, it's so devastating and so the listeners that don't understand this, this is a glimpse into what it is to be a mother in this situation. It is very, very challenging. So how did you come out? Like, what did you do with this thing he just handed you? Like, what was the season past that where you were like, I'm proving this dude wrong or?
Right. Well, I remember she was in the stroller, you know, walking her out into the parking garage in shock, thinking, how am I going to handle this? Because I just knew I wasn't going to, I chose the moment he said it, I chose, I'm not receiving this. I just said it to myself. I do not receive this. However, the explosion still took place in my brain. Like, I can't even explain what happened. Yeah. Like, there was a battle. Not somebody that was going to say, oh, well, this is it. Okay, now I know. Okay, I'll deal with it. No, no, mm-hmm. no. I couldn't accept it. And for, you know, some people said I was in denial. But that's the way I chose. No, he's telling me she can't learn. How does he know she can't learn?
He's making an educated. Yeah, he doesn't know, and that's the thing too. If you ever receive a diagnosis from a physician in this case, they don't know. They absolutely don't. They have an educated guess, and it's a lie. And that's the thing about science that the scientific community that I often like deeply disagree with, is that the way that they present this stuff is as if it is a fact. It is not a fact. You know,
that's right.
By looking at a situation and formulating an educated guess or a theory of outcome, you do not know, period. Don't ever present it as if it is a fact, because it's not a fact, because you have no clue. And so I love that as a mom, you're just like, you know, and other people coming from the outside, they think that this is comforting, but it's not. You're the person that's in charge of fighting for your child. You've just been delivered this crap diagnosis and a crap outcome, you know, projection of what's possible for your kid. And so, you know, this is Deanna rolling up her sleeves. And so, like, hell,
exactly.
I will let that be the outcome for my daughter.
But it still took me like a few days. I just went into like hibernation. Like,
yeah,
people knew
coming to terms with it.
Yeah. Everybody knew that I was going to this doctor to hear the report, right? So people were calling. Well, what did he say? I shut down the phones. I didn't even respond to anybody. I couldn't. I had to be careful with my words, like what I was. I had to like figure out how I was going to move forward with this. Like, I had to get strong in myself first. So I took a few days. I just, of course, told her dad, and I just said, you know, let's just keep this to ourselves. Let's pray about this. Let's see how we're going to handle this, right? But whatever he said, I don't accept that. Just don't even try. Just take her home and love her.
Yeah.
Don't even try to help her. That's what he told me. You know, no, that was not going to happen. And it's not that I was denying that there was a major issue here. I got that part.
Yeah. But you're waiting through it. Yeah.
Right. What can be done, right? So then after a few days, I knew how I was going to handle it. And, you know, I was just going to continue on as I had. We were going to, uncover every stone, both medically, alternatively, anything I could find, anything I could try. We were going to pray about it, and anything we felt led to do, we were going to do, and we were going to trust God, and we were just going to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did. And so she started therapies at 20 months old, and she's still doing therapies at 16. But in the meantime, we did, you know, we've gone to clinics that do special things and doctors that do special things and all the alternatives. And of course, all the natural doctors or, you know, conventional doctors as well, because she also started having seizures. And so we, you know, still doing the doctor thing. But I listened to what they say. I learned not to question them, not to tell them, just go along with them.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay.
I've created a barrier. I don't know if you guys, you did this too, but we're just letting like two tracks run at the same time, and don't let the other one know that they exist, because they get really upset, both sides. Like, I'm just going, okay, you're the parent, you're trying to do your best. And there are wisdoms on both sides that you have to account for your own child's needs. And it was another level of stress for me to even let the other ones know that they existed, because, you know, they tended to be so like demeaning to you for, how dare you act as if you could go outside of my medical knowledge. And I didn't get it as much on the natural side, but because a lot of the functional neurologists we've seen are like, it's a lot of cross knowledge, you know.
They're using both.
Yeah. So, but yeah, just like, don't let anybody know that you're trying to do something different, you know.
No. Don't question the doctors. You know, they let you know. And so anyway, so yeah, you just learn to sort of play the game. Like, I would go, I do like to go and get the testing done.
Yeah, there's some benefit to that, I feel like.
Right. So that we can know what we're working with. But then as far as, you know, then they're going to tell you to get on these drugs.
Yeah.
Right. It's the solutions. Thank you very much. Thanks for the prescription. Okay, now I take it to my natural doctor and go, okay, this is what we're dealing with.
This is what we're dealing with. And let's find like a layered you know, and I'm sure you guys have been like this. We were talking previous to the show about this principle of when you have a child with special needs, it's like creating a system of priorities of layers, right? You have to deal with the next biggest priority in line and work methodically through it. And as your story tells, this is a lot of years. You know, I'm only 3.5 years into this journey. You're 16 years into this journey. And so what does it look like walking through those layers for your daughter? And how is it that you came to where you are in your journey with treatment? Because I know that you've definitely taken another turn in how you're dealing with her condition. So.
Right. Well, it's been 16 years of pursuing, you know, anything that can help her. So I just got involved with all the groups and all the alternatives and, you know, anything that I saw that worked for other people for some of these issues. If it was non-invasive, if it was healthy, we tried it. You know, I didn't care how much it cost, just we're doing it, you know, and that, yeah. You know, going out of state, what we had to do. I found that very little that made a difference. The differences that I was looking for. But they were making a difference. All of this, you know, and I kept her very, very active. I, you know, she's always been involved with extracurricular activities. Physically, she's very, very strong and even athletic. Didn't start out that way, but she started having PT, you know, very, very early.
And that so we had helps. Her walking on a lot of strength.
Climbing things and, you know, and riding her bike. And so we've got some property. So she rides, she zips all over, you know. So all of these things made a difference. Later, I find out when I finally got the diagnosis. So they wanted to do, no, I wanted to do genetics testing again, actually, probably about 5 years ago. And we had it done this time. Something came up. It showed, and I don't know why it didn't prior to that, but this time it showed that she fit into this syndrome called Cornelia de Lange syndrome. And it's very rare, just genetic disorder. So what did that mean? I'm still in this point where I'm very careful now. I got to really guard myself because I'll look at it. I'll see what it is, but it's going to tell me what the prognosis looks like and that I'm not accepting.
Yeah.
So I looked at it very lightly. I looked it up by, you know, I saw, okay, yeah, I can see this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
It's just a word.
It's just a word. It meant nothing me than that. But because I had a diagnosis, I now qualified for some assistance for some of these therapies, which I was, you know.
Yeah. And that's the weird part about the system is that I remember when Cosette was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, it was kind of on her radar. She was 6 months when she was diagnosed. But really our physician was just very oriented towards getting a word on the list that would allow for benefits to open up. Because if you don't have that word, doors are closed. You will not get them opened.
Right.
And so, Cosette's list of diagnoses is pretty long because all of the diagnosis words attached to that condition, if on the chart, then opens it up. It's a system that is so messed up. And we also, what we were talking about beforehand, it's like, ridiculous, the hoops you have to go through. But, you know, 5 years ago, you were able to go through that hoop. So what kind of care was opened up to you at that point that was otherwise closed?
Well, to tell you the truth, I had been paying for it. I had been paying for all the therapies out of pocket. I mean, basically, you know, retirement went into all of it. But it was my husband experienced a disability. And everything changed. And now we could like no longer afford all of this stuff for her. And so somebody guided me, said, you know, you should really get this genetics done again. There's something, you know, there's something. And there it was. And so then it was easy. I just applied. But I'll tell you something interesting. You also have to go through the school system when your kids are school age.
Yeah.
You have to go through, there's so much, you know, all the legality. You have to go through the school district. they have send their psychologists or psychiatrists and do all this testing and evaluation. Yeah. When they did that with Jalen, the psychologist, she came out, she said, well, I can't really use this test. She goes, Jalen wasn't able to take it. And I said, well, I could have told you that, you know.
Yeah.
But she said, what's really odd about it is there's the written part where we ask her questions and that she really couldn't, you know, do much. Yeah. But then there's the functional part. And she said, usually they're about the same. Wherever they are cognitively, yeah. they're about functionally, not with Jalen. She goes,
yeah.
It's the difference is night and day. And I attribute that to all that we did.
Yeah.
Keep working. You know,
moving forward, not accepting.
Right. Now, if I had said, okay, doctor, I'll take her home and love her. Yeah. And no therapies and no working and no taking her places and no exposing her to things and no, you know, just constant. We know about neuroplasticity. We know yeah. if you challenge the brain, it's going mm-hmm. to grow, you know, even in, you know, 90-year-old stroke victims, they do that. But to send me home and say her brain can't change, her brain can't improve, I just couldn't accept that. And thank God I didn't because, you know, she functioned incredibly well. But we still had this very low cognitive situation. So there was an imbalance in her brain. And so where that left us was like basically having an older child who was like a toddler. Mm-hmm. So she's bigger, but she doesn't have the ability to regulate, to think about danger. As a matter of fact, one therapist said to me that she goes, imagine driving a car going 100 miles an hour with no brakes.
Yeah.
And said, that's Jalen's brain.
Yeah.
And that just really hit me. I mean, I could understand that. I could visualize that. And it was like, yeah, that's exactly. She has no way to stop, to control herself. She can't focus to listen to what you're saying. She's just constantly moving and running and no sense of danger. And so you're just constantly chasing her, watching her. I had to have eyes on her 24/7. Here she is growing. She's getting big. She's more
challenges,
able to do
challenges, yeah. change.
She sees people do things and she wants to do them.
Well, yeah. Well, duh. Like, why can't I do that? Yeah.
Right. So let me tell you something that happened last year that was just absolutely terrifying. She got up during the middle of the night, got my keys, opened the garage door, got in my car, started the car, backed the car out. And then I just know because she, all of a sudden I heard screaming in the middle of the night. I go running out into the hall and she's, the garage door is open. I can see car lights coming through the house and she's screaming and crying. I have no idea what's going on. And she was just hysterically crying. It had really scared her. I go running out there and the car's out of the garage and it's in neutral. So she backed it out. She must have gotten scared, tried to put it in park, but it went neutral. And then she jumped out. What if it was still backing out when she jumped out?
Oh, I know.
What if she jumped out by the car? I had my friend's 3-year-old did that, fell out and got crushed and was killed.
Yeah.
You know, it just, it just struck terror in me.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Now this has just changed everything. Now we've got to up the ante, you know, locks on the windows, locks on the doors, hide, you know, lock up my keys, cameras everywhere. I mean, we had a lot of this stuff anyway, but it just, you know, so all this time, I'm maintaining hope, you know, I never give up hope that something's going to come along. It's going to be helpful. I'm grateful for the good things that are going on, but we still need a lot of help. But it's hard to maintain hope when you see the, you know, these things are happening and things are going in this way and you don't even dare think about the future. Like what happens when she grows up? It just, I couldn't just like have to live in right now. So life, you know, life is very, very, very challenging with Jalen. I had to homeschool her because I couldn't find a school that could, you know, that was a good fit.
Yeah.
She had to have one on one and then when I found it, I thought it was great. And then that didn't work out. Anyway, she's homeschooled now.
Okay.
So that kind of leads me to, up to last year. And last year had gotten especially rough. Her dad and I divorced last year after 30 years of marriage. My health declined. I had a chronic health condition that I've been managing for 30 years. But last year, nothing I was doing was working. And so my health was declining. Jalen's behaviors were, you know, through the roof. You can just imagine with all the changes and
stress
with herself and then in the family. And she was very combative. She was fighting me all the time. It was just, it was in survival mode, day by day, day by day. So I hired a tutor to come in a couple times a week because she didn't want to work with me. You know, she was 16.
Mom knows nothing. Yeah. That's universally known.
you got to remember in her mind, she's much younger, but she's, but still like she's very social and she loves everybody. But with me, she fights me. If I say the sky's blue, she'll argue. No, it's not, challenges, right? Uh-huh. So anyway, in December, when things were just at their absolute worst, and I was, this incident with a car had happened like the month prior, and I'm thinking, what's going to become of us, really, seriously, right? I don't know how much longer I can do this, right? And somebody sent me some information, somebody I hadn't seen in 10 years from my old school. It was about some new product that, and it had to do with stem cells. Okay. And I was all about stem cells. I banked my kids' cord blood, you know, when my first daughters were born, because I knew stem cells were very important. So I've been paying for the cord blood storage all these years. And, I never used them, but they were there. And it got my attention, stem cells. And it was like a wearable technology. And so I Googled it, and the first thing that came up was a mother giving her testimony about her teenage son, who was nonverbal, autistic. Mm-hmm. And she talked about going out of the country to get stem cell therapy for her son. She was going to Panama, paying $30,000 each trip here in hopes that, she'd see some changes, but she hadn't up to that point. And somebody told her about this technology. And she tried it, and then she was talking about all these changes that had happened pretty rapidly with her child. And I looked it up. It was non-invasive, no drugs, nothing going on. I thought, we're trying it, right? I don't know why I haven't heard about this, but we're trying it. So I ordered it, and we started at the first of the year. So I put it on myself as well and her. And so, so I'm watching carefully for any changes in her, right? And something you wear every day for 12 hours. I'm not seeing anything. And on one particular day, I was like, it's a few weeks into it. It was a tutoring day. And on those days, I have to give her some medication. She cannot focus. She can't sit, and work with a tutor unless she gets it. So that's where I was with the meds. It was as needed only. Mm-hmm. The rest of the time, we just worked with it as best we could because they're bad side effects for her.
Yeah, meds, yeah.
I didn't like those with her. And so, there was some good to it, but the bad outweighed it to me, except in the case that she needed it for the tutoring.
Yeah.
So this particular day, I went looking for her about half an hour before her session. And normally, I'm geared up for the fight because she's not ready. She doesn't want to come in the house. She's playing with the animals and her hair's not brushed. She's not ready. But this day I found her and I had her pill. I found her sitting at the table. She had her books all spread out. She had made herself a snack and a drink, and she was sitting there at the table reading a book.
Oh, wow.
And I just stopped because not one of those things had ever happened, ever. She had never picked up a book to read it. She can read, but only if you force her to read with you, make her read. She's not a bad reader, but she just won't do it on her own.
Yeah.
And then so I just stopped. She didn't see me. And I noticed that her body was perfectly calm. Now, you have to know that since she was born, her body moves.
Yeah.
Her body twitches, mm-hmm. even during sleep.
Yeah.
It just, she moves, constant movement.
Mm-hmm.
And she was perfectly still.
Oh, wow.
And I just went, whoa. Like, I couldn't even believe my eyes, what was happening here. And I just said, okay, this is going to be a good test. This tutor's here twice a week. I'm not telling him. Let's just see if he says anything to me, right? If he notices it. I'm not giving her the medicine, right? I'm just not. So the tutor had never given me feedback after a session. He just leaves. But this day, he got out to the gate, and before he left, he texted me. And he said that they had had an amazing session, that she was extremely focused, and that she was very willing to try new things. And he just wanted to let me know, like, something unusual today. And I just went, oh, man, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so Jalen has never had another ADD med. Never another one. That was in jail.
Okay? That's awesome.
The next time he came, a couple days later, I said, hey, by the way, you know, Jalen didn't have her medicine. He goes, well, what do you mean? You know? So I told him and about this, you know, what we were doing. And he said, well, I want to give her a math test. And I said, what's the best she's done? He said, 51 out of 100. I said, okay, yeah. Let's see what happens. 100 out of 100 that day.
Oh, wow.
100 out of 100. And he told me her speed was greatly increased.
Ah, nice.
You know, my mind is blown, right? Because right at the same time this happened, that very week, it's like something had kicked in her brain. And all of a sudden, she's cleaning her room. She's straightening her bookshelf. She was brushing her hair. She was taking an interest in the way she looked. She had no concept of her appearance before.
Yeah.
And she started, like, taking care of the animals and just, like, taking responsibility for things. She stopped being combative with me. She was agreeable. Wow. I mean, it was just like a total turnaround. Well, when that happened, I was like, what is happening? I've got to see what's happening. So I dove into it to figure out, well, what is this doing? And I mean, I had an idea, but I wanted to know more. I found one of the clinical studies. It was a brain mapping study. And I saw what was happening to the brain. And I went, okay, that's it. That's what's happening. So about 5 weeks later, we decided to do a big assessment. We had done that in January.
Yeah.
She had scored 90, which put her at a kindergarten level.
Yeah.
And that was January. 5 weeks after she started this program, she scored 300, which put her at an upper third grade, lower fourth grade level.
Oh, wow.
So that is how much improvement happened with my daughter in that short of time.
Wow.
And to this day, now that was, I think we did that in March. We're getting ready to do another one. But she's continued to just progress all this time. She could never do anything more than addition, but now she's learning fractions and multiplication.
Oh, wow.
Now she started piano lessons. Like, her brain can process and function in ways that it couldn't before.
Yeah.
So
how's this making you feel? You know?
Well, I mean, all these months later, it's still hard to believe.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, 15 years is a long, hard time. And it just seemed like this happened so suddenly, still seems so sudden that it's kind of hard to believe. And I can't imagine ever going back to the way things were. And we still have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel now she can learn in ways she couldn't learn before. I mean, you got to think about it. She was 16 and she was still at kindergarten level. She wasn't progressing. She wasn't going to learn.
Yeah.
And now she can. And so now it's just full steam ahead. You know, it's just...
What does her sisters feel about this? I'm sure that, you know, as siblings, you know, I have another daughter that was older and they have their own experiences too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So her sisters are older and one is married. And so they don't necessarily live with us.
Yeah.
But they are amazed. They are amazed as well. And just thrilled, just thrilled
good.
And thankful. And they can interact with her now in ways that they couldn't before. My oldest brings over like all the cute clothes that she can't wear anymore. And now Jalen and her love try on the clothes and buy new hairstyles. And these are things that Jalen didn't care about before.
Yeah.
And now she does. And so now it's more of a, it's more of a connection that sisters would typically have because they do her in a more adult way and not like talking to a toddler, right?
Yeah.
It just expands so much. And that's been the case with Jalen, with everybody. She talks to everybody now. She can talk about, you know, things that are going on in their lives and she'll ask how people are doing. And,
oh, wow.
And she'll show empathy and compassion, whereas before, if you think about a toddler, they don't care about anybody.
Yeah.
It's all about, what about me? What about me?
Yeah.
And so it's just opened so much up for Jalen, mm-hmm. and the future, you know, looks very, very bright, you
Aww.
Know. We're just going for it.
Yeah. So what advice would you give to other parents going through the scenario that one of the hardest things to do is remain vigilant? You know, this is an event that changes your trajectory of life, and it's never the same. It's just, you're kind of got to just continue down the road. How do you stay motivated?
Right. Well, this has been such a challenge for me. The challenge to accept my daughter and all the wonderful things about her. I mean, there's so much that's so unique and so special and beautiful about her, and always has been. I mean, she is a delight, you know, and fun and joyful and beautiful and happy and loving and so many wonderful things. But I always kind of struggled because I was on a mission to help her improve and, you know, and kind of pushing her. But when you're a kid with all these things, they don't know they're being pushed. It's all fun and games, but they're fun and games that are designed to help them learn, to help them grow, to help their brains and all these things. So I found that part to be a struggle. Sometimes I said to myself, should I just accept this and just stop the struggling, you know, and just live with it? But I couldn't. It's my makeup. It's my faith. You know, it's just not me. I still push my other daughters to continually, you know, show them and things that I think will help them to improve life.
Each child has different needs, you know, and you would motivate your other children in the way that they're uniquely designed and need, you know, motivating. So with children with disabilities, it's the same. It's just that the level of intensity of care is a lot greater. So
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to diminish. There are kids that have very, very severe issues, and maybe the prognosis are even worse than mine, and we don't know how far these kids can grow, and they're naturally, you know, all so special and beautiful and precious, period.
Yeah.
Whether they do or don't, right?
Yeah.
But as moms, I would just encourage other moms, you know, we don't know, and things are always changing, and there are always new things coming out. And I just would say, I can't just be okay with just accepting that they're not going to grow. I can't. Yeah. I say, don't. I just can't. I would encourage everybody not to accept that.
Or,
is that wrong?
Or to live in tension. Live in tension between vigilance and acceptance, because there's a reality that your child is going through this, and you
reality.
Yeah. The reality that's ahead of you. And in that acceptance, give yourself grace too. I think a lot of hard things for me is not giving myself grace enough to give those moments of rest. Cause you know, I'm the type like you is just like push. We gotta do the next thing in the, you know, fight. Every single inch of the way. And I've started to give myself more moments of grace of going, okay, let's have a season in which we're okay to take what we have and we're working on right now. And if we're the same for a really long time, sometimes like that's just the need of the brain to every kid plateaus for a while, you know, until you can get to that next level of care and, but still have that determination and that vigilance to proceed forward, because this is a journey over time. I mean, your story with Jalen's not over, you know? And so you get to continue down this path, it's an opportunity for her, you know, and for you too, to grow, I'm sure.
That's the truth. And you said that very well. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, when we met, just like we're in the same camp, you know, we've gone through some really similar things, and it's just really hard. So it's almost like two moms just chatting about the path that we've been on, right?
Right. And it helps. It's comforting.
Yeah. So that's you're not alone.
Right. I appreciate what you do, you know, your podcast, so that people feel, you know, they're in a part of a community. They're not alone. There's just something about knowing other people have similar struggles. It's just something comforting about that.
Yeah. You know? Not And I, again, like that feeling of tension, I've had other guests on, or I've been guests on other podcasts where I've tried to encourage people to find that awareness of the tribe that's out there, because you're not the only person, but to not just rely on that tribe as your only like source of fulfillment, because there is a balance that needs to be struck, right? Because sometimes it's easier to kind of cocoon yourself into those communities because you don't have to explain yourself, you know?
Yeah, this is true. Don't get too comfortable anywhere.
Don't get too comfortable in that. Yeah, yeah. Because I've gone through that where my daughter has very visible disabilities. She's physically disabled, so she's got a mobility device. And realizing that, you know, I go in public, and I'm sure, too, your daughter is, you know, it's clear there's something amiss, right? So the impulse to explain is just always there. It's hard to go into public where people are, like, always wanting to ask questions about what's wrong with her. I'm like, nothing's wrong with her. Just
right.
She is,
right.
She is. Yeah. She's her, just as God made her. And she's got different abilities. You know, I don't even like calling it disability because it's really just different abilities, because even standard kids don't all have the same abilities. And, yeah. So how have you walked through my dad's oldest sibling? She has mental disabilities too. How has it been getting into those public spaces and dealing with the behavioral differences that she would have with other peers and that kind of stuff? I think that would be a good thing to walk through.
Sure. That's been really hard. That has been really hard. Especially as she's gotten older. So kids don't want other kids in their space.
Yeah.
Jalen, you know, as many times as, you know, we've tried to talk to her probably 50,000 times. You know,
yeah. Bubble, bubble, bubble. Yeah.
Everybody's got their bubble. Don't get in somebody's bubble. She wants to hug everybody. She just wants in every, even, you know, kids, adults, strangers in the store. Oh my gosh. Break away from me and go run and hug somebody. And it's been challenging. And, you know, most adults are gracious, you know, I'm trying to talk her, right? They can see that most adults are gracious about it. Kids aren't at all.
Yeah. They're like,
get away
whoa.
From me. Right. Back off, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, it's so hard because she's just wanted to, this is the hardest thing we've dealt with. She just wants to connect. She's so social. She wants to connect with other kids so badly. And she always has. She just hasn't known how. She wants to be, you know, her instinct is just to be very close, too close.
Yeah.
And to touch. And that's been her way. And then she can't converse, or she hasn't been able to converse in the past with other kids. And when they were real little, it wasn't as noticeable. But obviously, as she's older, it sure is. And so these have been issues. So, for instance, she was in gymnastics for like 4 years, right?
Oh, wow.
And she stayed at a certain level. She progressed to a certain level. And then there were just a couple of those items she just couldn't do. So she was just there. So she was getting bigger. The other kids were there and moving on.
Yeah.
But she couldn't get past that. But she loved it. So she went.
Yeah.
But then, you know, there came a time where she didn't want to go anymore. And that was so odd because she loved it. And, you know, I found out that girls were being mean to her. Right. Aww. And so this became an issue everywhere we went. Right. I mean, because it's just kids. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But it is the way it is. And so, you know, so I've tried to find places where she'll fit in. Like currently she's in a special dance group.
Oh, good. Yeah, we have some of those. I've been really tempted to get Cosette in as well. So that's awesome.
She has a blast. They love it. But I'll tell you what, since this therapy this year, I decided to try to get her into one of the typical classes.
Oh,
and so
nice.
She started ballet, a typical ballet class, same dance company. A couple months ago, she's doing great.
Oh,
teacher
good.
Says she's. I'm watching her. She's just doing what they're doing. She could have never done it.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
So, you know, it's been hard, especially the social aspects. So she had a really good friend she met in school at one time. She was a year younger than her, and so she'd come over here, and they had so much fun. And she was a typical kid, but her and Jalen just hit it off because ADHD too. So they both would just run and climb and jump. But then this little girl started maturing and Jalen didn't. And then all of a sudden she didn't want to come over anymore. She had things to do. She was going to other friends and it's hard. It's hard finding friendships. And
feeling left out for your kid. You know, you just want them to feel seen for what they are. Yeah.
And accepted and loved. Yeah. Celebrated.
Mm-hmm. Just like every other parent, every other kid. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So where can people get to know more about what you're doing? I know you're an advocate for the technology that you were speaking about. And if any other parent would be interested in seeking this out, as I know that they probably will. So.
Oh yeah. I hope so. I hope people are interested enough to check it out.
Yeah.
There are over 100 clinical studies behind it, 150 patents on the products, and it's just unbelievable. I don't know why I didn't know about it before, but they can find all the information on my website. It's at jaevision.com, J-A-E-vision, V-I-S-I-O-N.com, and everything is there, right?
Awesome.
And there's a link to schedule an appointment and just discuss with me if they'd like as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I'll put the link in the bio and make sure that you guys have easy access to it. And I really just appreciate you coming and sharing your story. I know there was so much more to the story than there was, just not enough time to dive in. But it should be an inspiration that there is hope, you know?
I hope so. That was my whole purpose for coming on, to give people hope. So thank you so much for having me, Nicole. You're wonderful. Really thank you for what you're doing.
Oh, thank you. Well, and come on back on for another episode of Pro Dignity No Doubt soon. Thanks. Bye.